WHD1, Evanston, Chicago. I'm Juliet, and this is WNUR News at 6. Tonight, a look into two upcoming student performances and a Chicago production of Fun Home, a sneak peek into theater midterms, insight into the 2025 ASG campaign, a brand new architecture review, and a home run of a weather forecast. Those stories and more coming up. From Northwestern University, this is WNUR News at 6. The Northwestern neo-futurist-inspired performance group TBD has a show this weekend. But what is neo-futurism? Reporter Ella Barnes has more.
TBD follows three rules of neo-futurism. They adhere to strict time constraints, are always themselves, and don't lie. The members write their own plays based on their lives. They run between 30 seconds to 3 minutes and range from serious to hilarious. Senior group member Lola Baudet explains,
"The whole idea is that while you're in a neo-futurist space, you don't subscribe to the idea of suspending disbelief.
No show is ever the same. The audience randomizes the order of the plays with a game board on stage. This can lead to emotional whiplash. The group embraces it. Their newest show, TBD Presents We Got a Dog, plays in Fisk 217 this weekend. Ella Barnes, WNUR News.
Jesus Christ Superstar will be on campus this weekend. The musical, that is. Medill's Juliet Allen reports.
It's not your typical adaptation. The famous musical, best known for its Christian themes, is produced by Northwestern's Jewish Theater Ensemble. The show's director, Talia Braverman, is leading the cast and crew through final rehearsals.
Especially at this point in time where the Jewish community across the nation is really at odds and trying to like piece together what it means to be a Jewish person, this show felt very potent in that context.
Casting was also gender blind. The roles of Jesus and Judas typically feature male actors. In this rendition, they are played by female and genderqueer students. The show will be performed this Friday and Saturday nights in Norris Student Center. Juliet Allen, Medill reports.
It's midterm season here at Northwestern, but for theater majors, midterms look a little different. Here's Yumi Talud with the story.
Last weekend, cast lists for theater shows in the spring came out. There are 8 musicals and 12 plays, making 20 shows total. Senior theater major Abraham Dietz Green likens auditions, or generals, to a theater major midterm season.
Especially because so many theater classes don't really have, certainly not written exams, and like if there is a final, it's often like a performance kind of group project that you spend a lot of in class time working on. Generals and callbacks are the mid-quarter final.
Catch Abraham and Crave, a student-written play, this spring. For WNUR News, I'm Yumi Talud.
Looking to escape the winter weather by going to the theater? Porchlight Music Theater's current production of Fun Home offers a lovely take on the moving, tragic, and hilarious musical. Sophia Quesa has the story.
The musical Fun Home starts not with an overture, but with a drawing desk and a cardboard box. It's not a typical way to open, but Fun Home is not a typical musical. Porchlight Music Theater's current production of the 2015 Best Musical Tony winner preserves the intimate nature of the show with its gorgeous music and heartwarming and wrenching book, all based on Alison Bechdel's 2006 family tragicomic of the same name.
The premise of the show is we meet the lesbian cartoonist Alison Bechdel in the year 2006 when she is starting to begin to write her graphic novel memoir. Alison herself is 43 years old, and she looks back at herself when she's about 10, and then again at about 19, when she sort of has these big revelations and realizations about her life.
That's actress Alana Chavez, who plays the role of Allison, who, as mentioned, is one of the three versions of the characters in the show. To Chavez, Fun Home is a show about many things, one of which is queerness.
When she's 19, she sort of comes to this big realization like, oh yeah, I am a lesbian. As often happens with coming out stories, they often turn into coming to terms stories, where she has to sort of come to terms with her life and how her queerness affects her family, and then in turn, how their queerness affects her as well.
It's these bold and important types of stories that Porchlight has been telling for years and wanted to recenter, which is how they ended up selecting the show and bringing on director Stephen Shellhart.
It's such a beautiful story. I am a father, a gay man who had his own journey with coming out and coming to terms with living authentically. And I think about my relationship with my daughter and the communication I have with the people I love and the time I spend with them, and do we ever really know the people closest to us? I was eager to kind of see what my point of view was and come at it from a director's point of view.
But this wasn't Shellhart's only point of view with the show. In 2022, he played Bruce, Allison's father, in a production of Fun Home at the Paramount Theater in Aurora. However, this new point of view provided Shellhart with a new angle and new discoveries in his return to the show.
When I was acting, I was thinking about his specific journey. And when I came to the table as a director, I was really intrigued by the show's portrayal of courage, what it means to have the courage to live authentically. And so for me, I came to the table really thinking, okay, I want to focus the story on how we excavate our memories, our past, how we come to terms with our past in order to move on to our future, and how we can have the courage to be who we are, to say who we love, and to love ourselves.
To Shellhart, it's more than just your run-of-the-mill musical. It's a story that breaks the norm in so many ways.
This is a memory play. It's non-linear. Memory is kind of like a junkyard of these boxes we place experiences in and things in until we're ready to look back on them.
So how do you tackle a show that spans time and memory like Fun Home? Scenic designer Jonathan Berg Einhorn's process started at the micro level.
I started with a line that Allison says in the first song of the show, that she takes real objects because she has trouble drawing things from memory. So the whole idea of memory and tangibility to create the world was kind of where the inspiration started from.
This jumping off point soon gave Berg Einhorn the ability to lose himself in the show's source material to develop his idea.
I actually created my own little collage of things from the book, things that are mentioned in the show that kind of resonated with me, and I put them all together and I started to develop that into this idea that the world is made up all of these little elements that kind of come into light as she remembers them.
And the end result? A giant lit-up house frame surrounded by hanging boxes of various sizes, whose contents get illuminated throughout the show depending on what time period the show currently is situated in, and is all grounded by items like a wooden staircase and door frame, a wonderful marriage of the abstract and concrete as memory often is. It's a product of many, many hours of work and many, many hours of collaboration.
So trying to figure out how to marry all of those elements together was actually really exciting to figure out, because it's something I have not ever tried to achieve before. Lighting on top of lighting on top of lighting that all comes together to create the space itself.
Another aspect of collaboration comes in the aforementioned Allisons. In Fun Home, every show, three actors have the job of portraying one character arc. It's a challenge, but it's one the actors are all up to. Here's Chavez again.
I am lucky enough to be on stage the entire time observing all of my fellow actors. I kind of am able to watch them, see what they're doing, and then try to subtly implement mannerisms.
Despite premiering on Broadway almost 10 years ago, Fun Home has still remained relevant to audiences. And Chavez has an idea on why, especially now, Fun Home is more needed than ever.
There's been a lot of things going on in the world right now that are preventing LGBTQ people from feeling like they can live authentically as themselves. This story is a cautionary tale of what happens when you don't have community, when you don't have visibility, when you don't get to live authentically, and how that can impact you and everyone around you in a negative way. But on the flip side of that, it's also a story of great hope and of resilience and what can happen if you do have that visibility, if you do have that community.
And it's getting to experience these multitude of emotions that makes live theater, and especially shows like Fun Home, so important. Here's Shellhart.
I'm just really hoping that people can take a second to escape and come into a shared space and enjoy a beautiful story that might make them feel something. Feel hope, feel courage, feel inspired to tell the people they love that they love them.
Porchlight Music Theater's Fun Home runs at the Ruth Page Center for the Arts from now until March 2nd. For WNUR News, I'm Sophia Kesa.
The 2025 ASG political election is underway. Four pairs of co-president candidates are vying for the spot. Jessica Watts caught up with one of those pairs to offer an insight into their campaign.
James Lafayette Jr. and Jamal Amani are vying for the coveted ASG co-president spots. If elected, they would make history as the first consecutive Black co-presidents of ASG. I sat down with the pair to learn more about them and their campaign. First, I started off with the question I was sure everyone was asking. Why run in the first place, and why together?
I'd say that me and Jamal have very similar goals and very similar upbringings. My mom treated cancer patients, and my dad was a school teacher. So they really raised me with the idea that you should make a better space in the world than how you entered. And I fully believe that running for president and actually making the change on campus that students want to see is what I should be doing.
James, well, extremely organized, meticulous, and ready to write on the drop of a dime. As soon as he hears about an issue happening, he's ready to write a bill, write a resolution, and get something done. When the charges against the students in January were run up against, I think within 24 hours, he had a bill ready to go.
Yeah.
I know when it comes to supporting student groups, he was always going to do it, and that's my goal as president.
James and Jamal have both served on ASG Senate in the past, including working together on the Social Justice and Inclusion Committee under last year's president-elect Tyshia Woods. They said their involvement in ASG has given them a better sense of what change needs to happen at Northwestern. One of those changes is opening more affinity spaces for students.
We currently have a Black House, which was hard fought for, and it sets a precedent on campus now that students deserve a space, especially of certain affinity groups. And time and time again, we see groups being pushed out of the way. We saw there was no space for Palestinian students on campus, and they didn't feel like they had any support within administration. And one of the resolutions that we came to was giving them a house on Sheridan. And with the renovation of Jacobs Center, we're now moving all these advisory buildings, leaving these houses empty, which means there's more space for student groups to come and occupy these spaces and make them their home permanent. So currently we're working with Rainbow Alliance, Alianza, and AIPAC for some of the first houses that are going to open up on campus and giving them that space. And as more houses open up, as more advisory buildings and these older buildings on campus get moved to Jacobs Center, that leads to more houses.
The pair's main campaign promise is to better the lives of Northwestern students. Their commitment to identity-based houses that provide a safe space for students is a testament to that.
I feel like we are looking at the bigger picture, whereas I feel other candidates are looking too far within Northwestern. I feel like there's something a lot bigger here, and I think it's much bigger than like food and facilities. It's like really like a betterment of people's lives on campus, because this is a home for a lot of people. Everything is connected, and I feel that if we don't care, if we don't support our students, if we don't think about the injustices that are going on in the world, they will continue, and those who perpetrate it will face no consequences.
James and Jamal hope to further ASG's visibility on campus. Last year's co-presidents Tyshia Woods and Caleb Sneed worked hard to make this happen. James and Jamal are continuing that fight.
So when it comes to fostering communication, making ASG more visible, because many candidates talked about making an open forum for ASG when ASG is the open forum. We've worked with groups like NU Fossil Free. They're an outside student group, no relation to Senate. They came in, passed a vote, and are now connecting with different administrators to get the job done. It's not a closed space, and it's never been closed. All our minutes and everything is always publicly available. It's just not well seen, and that's something that we want to work on specifically.
Fossil Free NU isn't the only student group on campus that's endorsing James and Jamal for presidents. The pair have also received endorsements from FMO, NUSJP, Advancement for the Undocumented Community, and the Asian Pacific American Coalition, just to name a few. While James and Jamal seek to represent all communities on campus, their election would be history-making in the Black community. I asked them about what that achievement would mean to them.
I think it's important that when you have a stance, you stay firm and you stay true to it, if you truly believe that it's right. And I think having the experience of being Black in America, I'm a first-generation American. My father immigrated here over 20 years ago. I've seen his struggles with immigration, with facing this new struggle of being Black in a space where it's disenfranchised. And I've also moved around a lot. I've moved more than 20 times. So I've seen a lot of the country and a lot of the different issues that we face. And I think understanding that struggle and still making it here kind of shows that anyone can really do it.
I've mentioned my upbringing a little bit. Like, I'm a Figley student. I grew up low income. It's had profound effects on my life and how I view society in a way. I see a lot of examples of people, usually like politicians or like celebrities and stuff, who grew up in those circumstances and who seek to pull the ladder up and prevent people who grew up in those circumstances from achieving. And I feel like to be like the second like pair of Black presidents at Northwestern, it's really profound, and it shows that like you can achieve. And I feel like if we are elected during our co-presidency, we're not going to pull up that ladder. We're going to make sure that every student on this campus has an equal opportunity to achieve, to be involved in ASG, to give their ideas to administration.
With the Trump administration's recent decisions involving immigration, there is a lot at stake for the almost 10,000 international students at Northwestern. James and Jamal wish to protect them, too.
I know Trump recently talked about revoking student visas for those who dare to use their voice.
Mm-hmm.
Northwestern should do everything in their power to make sure that doesn't happen, at least to our students.
Mm-hmm.
And I think ensuring that both the students, Senate, and administration are aligned on our goals and fostering this sanctuary and sense of community and safety is the most important thing that we can do.
Voting is now open and will close tomorrow, February 8th. For WNUR News, I'm Jessica Watts.
On this week's Architecture Review, John Kowalski reviews the Ypsilanti Water Tower and asks the question, is this structure worth 5 stars?
Hi there, everybody. This is John Kowalski, currently in Ypsilanti, Michigan. As I'm sitting in the car coming back from a speech tournament, which was quite lovely, I'll tell you, I see out the right window of this car a large tower. You see, this tower holds special significance for various reasons that I will outline below in this week's Architecture Review. Hello, folks, and welcome to the WNUR News Architecture Review. This is a weekly segment in which I will review a building or structure and give it a certified WNUR architecture score from 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. Today's architectural review will focus on the Ypsilanti Water Tower, a 147-foot-tall structure that, in 1975, was given American Water Landmark status. According to the Ypsilanti Community Utilities Authority, the structure, built in 1890, quote, contains a steel tank with a 250,000-gallon capacity. The main purpose for the reservoir is to store a reserve supply of water to feed cast iron mains constructed in 1885. The elevation provides sufficient gravity pressure to furnish fire services in emergencies, unquote. The tower, created in the Queen Anne style of architecture, holds a rather commanding presence in Ypsilanti. However, the tower, for some, is known for a different reason. The Huffington Post wrote an article discussing the top 10 buildings that happen to look like a certain body part, and the tower's apparent phallic structure was found on this list. To add to the humor of it all, many memes can be found online referencing the tower's apparent similarity to a certain phallic object. Putting the phallic imagery present within the popular canon aside, though, the tower is a rather fine construction, with its brick facade and clean top making for a nice contrast to the town's rather low-rise architectural surroundings. Nothing truly spectacular or groundbreaking in the architecture world, but nice. Ultimately, WNUR News will give this tower a 4 out of 5 rating. This is a good structure and a fine addition to Ypsilanti. For WNUR News, I'm John Kowalski.
With the Super Bowl coming up this weekend, Ilse von Heimberg gives us a look into the weather conditions of past and present games for Fairweather Friends.
Hi, this is Ilse von Heimberg, and welcome back to Fairweather Friends. We've survived the first week of February, and luckily enough, it hasn't been that bad. I mean, sure, I almost wiped it on my walk to the gym the other morning because of icy sidewalks. And I think I saw my life flash before my eyes. It was probably my sign to turn around and go back to bed, but at least we haven't seen the same levels of cold and wind we did about 2 weeks ago. And as for tonight, you can see temperatures hover around 27 degrees, cloudy with some winds. And as for this lovely weekend we have ahead, Saturday we'll see a high of 33 degrees and a low of 26. There is a 50% chance of snow in the afternoon, but accumulation's only supposed to be under an inch. Hopefully, it's just enough to make the ground sparkle. And for Super Bowl Sunday, we'll see a high of 27 and a low of 19. It'll be cloudy pretty much all day, and thank goodness the game isn't here in Chicago, or those poor players would freeze. But speaking of the big game, what's the weather like in New Orleans this weekend? Well, I'll tell you. People in town for the game will see a high of 76 and a low of 63, with some fog in the morning and partly cloudy skies all day. So, conditions should be pretty good. Perfect weather for the Eagles to take flight. No, I'm just kidding. We don't endorse any particular here at WNUR. But let's take a walk down memory lane, shall we? The coldest Super Bowl was actually in New Orleans in 1972 when the Cowboys beat the Dolphins. The temperature was around 39 degrees with wind chill down to the 20s. The snowiest Super Bowl was in Detroit in 2006.
Hi, everybody. This is John Kowalski, currently in Ypsilanti, Michigan.
The Steelers emerged victorious. The wettest Super Bowl was in 2007 when the Cowboys beat the Bears in Miami. So, whatever team you're rooting for this weekend, or if you're only there for the halftime show, stay warm. This has been Ilse von Heimberg for Fairweather Friends, and have a great weekend, everybody.
Taking a look into headlines in Evanston, Chicagoland, and across the nation and globe, on Tuesday, the Building Electrification Working Group revised the proposed Healthy Buildings Ordinance. The ordinance will go to Evanston City Council next week. The measure would require large buildings to have zero on-site emissions by 2050. On Thursday, Trump signed an executive order banning trans women from women's sports. It is the fourth order the president has signed that targets transgender people since he took office on January 20th. That's all for WNUR News at 6 p.m. For more news updates and reports, follow us on X at WNUR News and Instagram at WNUR News 893. You can listen to these and other WNUR News stories on our website, WNURnews.org. That's WNURnews.org. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Our producer today is Ella Smith, and our reporters are Ella Barnes, Julia Allen, Lisa Lou, Sophia Kesa, Jessica Watts, John Kowalski, and Elsa Von Heimberg. I'm Julia Allen. Catch our next newscast Monday, February 10th. Now, back to scheduled programming.